I should have known, Vimes thought. Snapcase was a devious devil, and now Carter's got his feet under another bastard's table. Captain of the Guard. I haven't been making a lot of friends lately, said Vimes. Okay, gentlemen, I'm going to run. If you lot melt away into the crowd, you'll be fine, I expect. No fear, Sarge, said Sam, and there was a general murmur of agreement. We had an amnesty, said Dickens. They can't do this. Anyway, they were shooting at everyone, said one of the soldiers. Bastards, they need a good going over. They've got bows, said Vimes. So we ambush them, Sarge, said Dickens. Choose your ground and fight up close, and a crossbow's just a piece of wood. Did any of you hear me? Said Vimes. They're after me, not you. You do not want to mix it with Carter. You, Snouty, you shouldn't be doing this at your time of life. The old jailer glared at him through runny eyes. That's a hell of a thing to you, for you to say to me, Sarge, he said. How do we know he won't decide to come after us anyway? Said Dickens. An amnesty's an amnesty, right? They can't do this. There was a general chorus and lines of, yeah, that's right. It's happening, Vimes thought. They are talking themselves right into it. But what can I do? We've got to face them. I've got to face them. I've got to face Carter. The thought of leaving him here with all he knows. How about if we head down Keeble Street, said Dickens. Lots of little alleyways off there. They'll go rushing along, thinking we've bolted for the watch house, and we'll have 'em. We ain't standing for this, Sarge. Vimes sighed. Okay, he said. Thank you. You're of one mind? There was a cheer. Then I won't make a speech, said Vimes. There isn't time. I'll just say this. If we don't win this, if we don't see him off, well, we've got to, that's all. Otherwise it'll be very bad for this city. Very bad. That's right, Dickens cut in insistently. There was an amnesty. But look, said one of the soldiers, I don't know half the men here. If we're going to close in, we want to know who's on our side. That's right, said Snouty. I mean, some of them chasing us was watchmen. Vimes raised his eyes. The wide alley in front of them, known as Lobsneaks, stretched all the way to Cable Street. It was lined with gardens, and there were purple flowers on the bushes. The morning air smelled of lilac. I did call a battle once, said Dickens, looking up at a tree. In history it was, and there was this company, see, and they was a ragtag of different squads, and all covered in mud in any case, and they found themselves hiding in a field of carrots. So as a badge, they all pulled up carrots and stuck them on their helmets, so's they'd know where their friends were, and incidentally have a nourishing snack for later, which is never to be sneezed at on a battlefield. Well, so what? Said Dibbler. So what's wrong with a lilac flower? Said Dickens, reaching up and pulling down a laden branch. Makes a spanking plume, even if you can't eat it. And now, Vimes thought, it ends. I think they are very bad men, said a high, rather elderly, but nevertheless determined voice from somewhere in the crowd, and there was a glimpse of a skinny hand waving a knitting needle. And I shall need a volunteer to escort Mrs. Soups on home, he said. Carter surveyed the length of Lobsneaks. Looks like we just follow the trail of egg, he said. Looks like Keel has a yellow streak. It didn't get quite the laugh he'd expected. A lot of the men he'd been able to collect had a more physical sense of humour. But Carter had, in his own way, some of Vimes's qualities, only they were inverted. A certain kind of man looks up to someone who's brave enough to be really bad. Are we going to get into trouble for this, Captain? And, of course, you got those who were just along for the ride. He turned to Sergeant Nock, with Corporal Quirk lurking behind him. He fully shared Vimes's view of them, although he approached it, as it were, from the other direction. You couldn't trust either of them. But they hated Keel with that gnawing, nerve-sapping hatred that only the mediocre can really bring to bear, and that was useful. "How do you think we're going to get into trouble, Sergeant?" he said. "We're working for the government."
"He's a devious devil, sir," said Nock, as if it was a character flaw.
"Now, you lot listen to me, right?" said Carter. "No mess-ups this time. I want Keel alive, OK, and that kid Vimes. You can do what the hell you like to the rest of them."
"Why do you want him taken alive?" said a quiet voice behind Carter. "I thought Snapcase wanted him dead. And what's the kid done that's so wrong?"
Carter turned. To his mild surprise, the watchman behind him didn't flinch.
"What's your name, mister?" he said.
"Coates." "Ned's the one I told you about, sir," said Nock urgently, leaning over Carsa's shoulder.
"Keel gave him the push, sir, after—"
"Shut up," said Carsa, without taking his eyes off Coates. There wasn't a hint of fear there, not even a glimmer of bravado. Coates just stared back.
"Did you just come along for the ride, Coates?" he said.
"No, Captain. I don't like Keel. But Vimesy is just a kid that got dragged along. What are you going to do to him?"
Carsa leaned forward. Coates did not lean back.
"You were a rebel, weren't you?" he said. "Don't like to do what you're told, eh?"
"They're going to get a big drink of ginger beer,"
said a voice drunk with evil delight. Carsa turned and looked down at the skinny black-clad ferret. He was somewhat battered, partly because he'd put up a fight when the watchman had tried to pry him out of his cell, and mostly because Todsy and Muffer had been waiting outside. But he'd been allowed to live. Beating something like Ferret to death was, to the other two, an embarrassing and demeaning waste of fist. He certainly flinched under Carsa's gaze. His whole body was a flinch.
"Did I ask you to speak, you little dog's tonker?"
Carsa inquired.
"No, sir." "Right. Remember that. It could save your life one day."
Carsa turned his attention back to Ned.
"Okay, sunshine. This is the bright new dawn you wanted. You asked for it, you got it. We've just got to sweep away a few of yesterday's leftovers. By order of Lord Snapcase, your mate. And it ain't your job to ask why and who, but young Vimesy? Why, I think he's a game lad who'll be a credit to the city if he's kept out of the way of bad company. Now, Nock says you're good at thinking. So now you tell me what you think Keel's going to do."
Ned gave him a look that went on for slightly longer than Carsa felt comfortable with.
"He's a defender," he said eventually. "He'll be back at Watch House. He'll set a few traps, get the men tooled up and wait for you."
"Huh?"
said Carsa.
"He doesn't like to see his men hurt," said Ned.
"This is not going to be his day then," said Carsa.
Halfway down Cable Street was a barricade. It wasn't much. A few doors, a table or two. By the standards of the big one that was even now being turned back into unbelligerent dining room furniture, it barely existed at all. Carsa's informal crew walked slowly, staring up at buildings and into the mouths of alleys. People in the street fled at their approach. Some men walk in a way that projects bad news ahead of them. Vimes crouched behind the makeshift wall and peered through a crack. They'd snatched a few crossbows from aimless soldiers on the way here, but by the look of it, Carsa's men had at least 15 between them, and they outnumbered the lilac lads 2-1. If push came to shove, he'd take Carsa out right now. It wasn't the way it ought to go. He wanted people to see the man hang. He wanted the city to execute him. Going back empty-handed would leave a loose end flapping. He heard the sound of sobbing from further along the barricade. It wasn't young Sam, he knew, and Nobby Nobbs had probably cried all the tears a body was capable of some time ago. It was Reg. He sat, with his back to the makeshift defence, the threadbare flag across his knees, and tears dripping off his chin.
"Reg, you ought to go," Vimes hissed. "You don't even have a weapon."
"What's the good of it, eh?" said Reg. "You were bloody right, Sarge. Things just go round and round. You got rid of the bloody unmentionables, and here they are again. What's the point, eh? This city could be such a great place, but no, oh no, the bastards always end up on top. Nothing ever bloody changes. They just take their money and mess us around."
Carsa had stopped 20 yards from the barricade and was watching it carefully.
"Where the world, Reg," murmured Vimes, counting enemies under his breath.
And a big covered cart came around the corner, rocking under its load. It rolled to a halt a little way from Carsa's crew, partly because the way was blocked, but mostly, perhaps, because one of the men had walked up to the driver and aimed a crossbow at his head.
"And now the bloody bastards have won," moaned Reg.
"Every day of the week, Reg," said Vimes, trying to follow the movements of too many people at once.
The other men were spreading out. After all, they had the firepower. He couldn't let them get behind the barricade. The man holding up Mr. Devler, the cart driver, wasn't paying too much attention. Now Vimes wished he'd put himself in the wagon. Oh, well, someone had to start the rumble.
"Yeah? You want to shoot something, bastards?"
They all stared, Carsa too. Reg had stood up and was waving the flag back and forth, was clambering over the barricade. He held the flag like a banner of defiance.
"You can take our lives, but you'll never take our freedom!" he screamed.
Carsa's men looked at one another, puzzled by what sounded like the most badly thought-out war cry in the history of the universe. Vimes could see their lips moving as they tried to work it out. Carser raised his crossbow, gestured to his men and said, "Wrong!" Reg was hit by 5 heavy bolts, so that he did a little dance before falling to his knees. It happened in seconds. Vimes opened his mouth to give the order to charge, and shut it when he saw Reg raise his head. In silence, using the flagpole as an aid, Reg got back to his feet. 3 more arrows hit him. He looked down at his skinny chest, bristling with feathers, and took a step forward. And another. One of the crossbowmen drew his sword and ran at the stricken man and was knocked into the air by a blow from Reg that must have felt like it had come from a sledgehammer. And in the ranks of the crew there was a fight. Someone in a copper's uniform had drawn his own sword and taken out 2 bowmen, and the man at the cart was running back to the action. "Get them!" Vimes yelled and leapt the barricade. There was no plan any more. Dickens and his men poured out of the cart. There were still loaded crossbows out there, but a bow is suddenly not the weapon you want to be holding when angry swords are approaching from both directions. It'll come when you call. All plans, all futures, all politics were elsewhere. Vimes scooped up a fallen sword, and with a sword in either hand, screamed wordless defiance and launched himself at the nearest enemy. The man went down, headless. He saw Snouty go down in the melee, and sprang over him to catch his attacker in a windmill of blades. And then he spun around to confront Nock, who dropped his sword and ran. And Vimes ran on, not fighting but hacking, ducking strokes without seeing them, blocking attacks without ever turning his head, letting the ancient senses do their work. Someone was slicing towards young Sam. Vimes brought a sword down on the arm in true self-defence. He moved on, in the centre of a widening circle. He wasn't an enemy, he was a nemesis. And as suddenly as it had come, the beast withdrew, leaving an angry man with 2 swords. Carser had retreated to the side of the street, with his men, far fewer men, with him. Colon was on his knees, throwing up. Dickens was down, and Vimes knew he was dead. Nobby was down too, but that was just because someone had kicked him hard, and he'd probably decided that staying down was best. There were a lot of Carser's men down, more than half. Some more had fled a maniac with 2 swords. Some had even fled Red Shoe, who was sitting on the barricade, staring at the sheer weight of arrows in him. As he watched, his brain seemingly decided that he must be dead on this evidence, and he fell backwards. But in a few hours, his brain would be in for a surprise. No one knew why some people became natural zombies, substituting sheer stubborn willpower for blind life force, but attitude played a part. For Red Shoe, life was only just beginning. Young Sam was upright. He looked as though he'd thrown up, but he'd done well to survive his first real melee. He gave Vimes a weak smile. "What's happening now, Sarge?" he managed, taking off his helmet and wiping his forehead. Vimes sheathed a sword and quietly slipped one of Mrs. Goodbody's little friends out of his pocket. "That depends on what happens over there," he said, nodding towards the other end of the street. Sam obediently turned to look and fell asleep. Vimes pocketed the cosh, and saw Coates looking at him. "Whose side are you on, Ned?" he said. "What do you hit the kid for?" said Ned. "So he's out of it. You got anything to say?" "Not much, Sarge," Ned grinned. "We're all learning a lot today, aren't we?" "True enough," said Vimes. "There's even bigger bastards than you, for a start." This time Vimes grinned. "But I try harder, Ned. You know Carser? He's a murderer, and just about everything else, too. A stone-cold killer, with brains. Is this going to go the distance?" "Yep, it's got to. We've got to stop this, Ned. This is the only chance. It stops here, or not at all. Can you imagine him loose, now he's pally with Snapcase?" "Yes, I can," said Ned. "Just as well I wasn't planning anything this evening, eh? But you can tell me one thing, Sarge. How do you know all this?" Vimes hesitated. But at a time like this, what difference did it make? "I'm from this city," said Vimes. "But, oh, there was a hole in time, something like that. You want to know? I travelled here in time, Ned, and that's the truth." Ned Coates looked him up and down. Blood covered Vimes's armour and his hands and half his face, and he was holding a bloody sword in his hand. "From how far back?" he said. Time stopped. Coates froze and faded in colour into a world made up of shades of grey.
"Nearly there, Your Grace,"
said Sweeper behind Vimes.
"Ye gods!" yelled Vimes, flinging his sword to the ground. "You are not making any friends here, you know."
The sword hadn't hit the ground. It hung a few inches from his hands and had faded into greyness.
"There's just a few things we need to tell you," said Sweeper,
as if a sword in mid-air was a minor consideration.
"What's happened to the bloody sword?" said Vimes, to whom they weren't. "Time has stopped for everyone but you," said Sweeper patiently. "Actually, that sentence is wrong in every particular, but it's a useful lie. It'll just take us a moment to set things up."
Now Vimes had time of some kind to look around. The whole street was darker, as if the fight had been taking place in the half-light just before dawn. The only colour was in the robes and faces of Sweeper and Q as they manoeuvred a handcart out of an alley. It held a couple of small stone columns and the body of John Keel wrapped in a shroud.
"We have some good news," said Sweeper.
"You have?" said Vimes weakly. He walked over to the body.
"Indeed," said Q, unshipping the stone cylinders.
"We thought we might have to persuade you to remove all your armour, but you will not, I think, need to do this."
"That's because it will stay here," said Lutze. "Belongs here, see?"
"No," said Vimes. "I don't know what the hell you're talking about."
He touched the body.
"So cold," he said. "That's what I remember. He was so cold."
"A morgue does that to people," said Sweeper, in a matter-of-fact voice.
"Now, please pay attention, Commander," said Q. "When we operate the—"
Vimes looked up, violence in his eyes. Sweeper laid a hand on Q's arm.
"We've got things to do for a minute or two," he said.
"Yes, but it's vital that he knows how to—"
"We've got things to do for a minute or two," Sweeper repeated, making a face.
"Oh, what? Oh, yes, we've got, things to do, things to do, things."
They wandered away. Out of the corner of his eye, Vimes saw them walking back and forth across the street, as if taking measurements. He looked back at John Keel.
"But what could you say? Sorry you're dead?"
Keel had originally died on a barricade, not in a street fight. But he was just as dead all the same. Vimes was hazy on religion. He attended watch funerals and went to such religious events as the proper fulfilling of the office of commander entailed, but as for the rest, well, you saw things sometimes that made it impossible to believe not only in gods but also in common humanity in your own eyes. From what he could remember, Keel had felt the same way. You got on with things. If there were any gods, you expected them to get on with things too, and didn't interrupt them while they were working. What could you say to a dead copper? What would he want said?
Ah.
He leaned closer. "Carcer's going to bloody swing for this," he said, and stood back. Behind him, Sweeper coughed theatrically.
"Ready, Your Grace," he said.
"Ready enough," said Vimes.
"We were telling you about the armour," said Sweeper. "It'll—"
"The thing is, Commander," Q interrupted, "that you and this fellow Carcer and all the clothes and possessions you arrived with form an elongated trans-time anomaly, which is under considerable tension."
Vimes turned and looked at Sweeper.
"It's very, very hard to move things out of the time where they belong, but it takes much less effort to move them back to where they were," Sweeper translated.
Vimes carried on staring.
"Everything really, really wants to stay where it should be," Sweeper tried.
"You're right there," said Vimes.
"All we do is grease that way," said Sweeper. "We give a little push, and it'll all snap back, and away you go. Have you had anything to eat this morning?"
"No."
"Shouldn't be too messy, then," said Sweeper.
When Vimes looked puzzled, he went on,
"Undigested food. It'll stay here, you see." "You mean it'll come tearing out of—"
"No, no, 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 no," said Q quickly. "You won't notice, but a nourishing meal when you get back would be a good idea."
"And the armour stays here?"
Q beamed.
"Yes, Your Grace, everything. Eye patch, socks, everything."
"Boots too?"
"Yes, everything."
"What about me drawers?"
"Yes, those too, everything."
"So I'll arrive in the nuddy?"
"The one costume that's in fashion anywhere," said Sweeper, grinning.
"Then why did all my armour arrive with me when I came?" said Vimes. "And damn Carcer had his knives, that's for sure."
Q opened his mouth, but Sweeper answered faster. "It takes 1,000 steps to get to the top of a mountain, but one little hop will take you all the way back to the bottom," he said. "Okay?"
"Well, I suppose it makes sense," Vimes began.
"That isn't how it works at all, Lutsay," wailed Q.
"No," said Sweeper, "but it's another good lie.
Look, Commander, we don't have a damn great thunderstorm, and we don't have enough stored time. This is a field operation. It's the best we can do. We'll get you back, and your prisoner, although you almost certainly won't arrive in the same place, cause of quantum. It's hard enough making sure you don't arrive 200 feet in the air, believe me. Pushing all your clothes as well, when they belong here, that just takes too much power. Now, are you ready? You'll need to go back to where you were standing. Get to Casa as soon as you can. You must grab him, otherwise he'll stay behind."
"Okay, but I've changed lots of things," said Vimes.
"Leave that to us," said Sweeper.
"What about Keel?" said Vimes, walking away with reluctance.
"Don't worry. We told you at the temple we'll put him in your armour. He'll have died in battle."
"Make sure nothing happens to young Sam," said Vimes as Q carefully prodded him into position.
The little stone columns began to spin.
"We will.
Make sure Red Shoe gets a decent burial."
"We will."
"Not too deep. He'll be wanting to come out again in a few hours."
Q gave him a last prod.
"Goodbye, Commander."
Time came back. Ned was looking at him.
"What happened just then, Sarge? You blurred."
You only get one question, Ned," said Vimes, fighting the moment of nausea. "Now, let's show Snapcase where the line's drawn, shall we? Let's finish it."
They charged, the men falling in behind them. Vimes remembered in slow motion. Some of Carsa's men ran at the sight of them. Some raised their hastily reclaimed weapons, and Carsa stood there and grinned. Vimes headed for him, ducking and weaving through the fight. The man's expression changed as Vimes approached. Vimes was speeding up, shoulder-charging and thrusting other bodies away. Carsa raised his sword and took a stance, but there was no room for finesse in the melee, and Vimes closed like a bull, knocking the sword up and grabbing Carsa by the throat.
"You're nicked, my old chum," he said, and then it all went black.
He felt later on that there should have been more to it. There should have been rushing blue tunnels, or flashes, or the sun should have shot round and round the sky. Even pages tearing off a calendar and fluttering away would have been something. But it was just the blackness of the deepest sleep, followed by pain as he hit the floor. Vimes felt arms reach down and haul him to his feet. He shook them off as soon as he was upright and focused through the bleary mist on the face of Captain Carrot.
"Good to see you, sir. Oh, dear."
"I'm fine," croaked Vimes, through a throat that felt stuffed with sand. "Where's Carter?"
"You got a nasty cut on..."
"Really? I'm amazed," growled Vimes.
"Now, where the hell is Carter?"
"We don't know, sir. You just appeared in midair and landed on the floor, in a lot of blue light, sir."
"Ah," muttered Vimes. "Well, he's come back somewhere, close probably."
"Right, sir. I'll tell the men to..."
"No, don't," said Vimes. "He'll keep. After all, where's he going to go?"
He wasn't too sure of his legs. They felt as though they belonged to someone with a very poor sense of balance.
"How long was I away?" he said.
Ponder Stibbons stepped forward.
"About half an hour, Your Grace. We have hypothesised that there was some temporal disturbance which, coupled with the lightning stroke and a resonance in the standing wave of the library, caused a space-time rupture."
"Yeah, it felt something like that," said Vimes hurriedly.
"Half an hour, do you say?"
"Did it feel longer?" said Ponder, taking out a notebook.
"A bit," Vimes conceded.
"Now, has anyone here got a pair of drawers?
I can see your house from up here." That was Carsa. He liked you to stew, to use your imagination. And Vimes had said, "Where's he going to go?"
"Captain, I want you and every man you can spare, every damn man, to get up to my house right now, understand?" he said. "Just do it. Just do it now." He turned to Ridcully. "Arch-Chancellor, can you get me there faster?"
"The watch wants magical assistance," said the Arch-Chancellor, taken aback.
"Please," said Vimes.
"Of course. But you realise you have no clothes on."
Vimes gave up. People always wanted explanations.
He set off, overruling the jelly in his legs, running out of the octangle and across the lawns until he reached the university's Bridge of Sighs, where he sped past Nobby and Colon, who were drawn into the wake of watchmen running to keep up. On the other side of the bridge was the garden known as the Wizard's Pleasance. Vimes ploughed through it, twigs whipping at his bare legs, and then he was out and onto the old towpath, mud splashing up over the blood. Then right and a left past amazed bystanders, and then there was the cat's head cobbles of Schoon Avenue under his feet, and he found the wind to accelerate a little. He didn't slow until he reached the gravel drive and almost collapsed at the front door, hanging onto the bell pull. There were hurrying feet, and the door was wrenched open. "If you're not Willikins," growled Vimes, focusing, "there's gonna be trouble."
"Your Grace, whatever happened to you?" said the butler, pulling him into the hall.
"Nothing," said Vimes. "Just get me a fresh uniform, nice and quietly, and don't let Sybil know." He read everything in the way the butler's face changed. "What's happened to Sybil?"
Willikins backed away. A bear would have backed away.
"Don't go up there, sir. Mrs. Content says it's all rather difficult, sir. Things aren't, happening quite right."
"Is the child born?"
"No, sir. Apparently not, sir. It's rather... Mrs. Content says she's trying everything, but maybe we ought to send for the doctor, sir."
"For a childbirth?"
Willikins looked down. After 20 unflappable years as butler, he was shaking now. No one deserved a confrontation with Sam Vimes at a time like this.
"Sorry, sir."
"No," snapped Vimes. "Don't send for a doctor. I know a doctor, and he knows all about this sort of thing. He'd better..."
He ran back outside in time to see a broomstick touch down on the lawn, piloted by the Arch-Chancellor himself.
"Thought I'd better come along anyway," said Ridcully. "Is there anything?"
Vimes swung himself onto it before the wizard could get off.
"Take me to Twinkle Street. Can you do that?" he said. "It's important."
"Hang on, Your Grace," said Ridcully, and Vimes's stomach dropped into his legs as the stick climbed vertically. He made a small mental note to promote Buggy Swires and buy him the buzzard he'd always wanted. Anyone prepared to do this every day for the good of the city couldn't be paid too much.
"Try my left pocket," said Ridcully when they were well aloft. "There's something there belongs to you, I believe."
Nervously, well aware of what a wizard's pocket might hold, Vimes pulled out a bunch of paper flowers, a string of flags of all nations, and a silver cigar case.
"Landed on the bursar's head," said the Arch-Chancellor, steering around a seagull. "I hope it's not damaged."
"It's fine," said Vimes. "Thank you. I'll put it back for now, shall I? Don't seem to have any pockets on me at the moment."
It found its way back, Vimes thought. We're home.
"And a suit of ornamental armour landed in the high-energy magic building," Ridcully went on. "And I am happy to report it is very badly bent out of shape," said Vimes.
Ridcully hesitated. He was aware of Vimes's feelings of guilt.
"Excessively, Your Grace. Completely bent out of shape because of quantum thingamies, I expect,"